Questions 14 to 16 are based on an interview about a police officer talking about her work. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 14 to 16.
Now, you spent quite some time as a beat officer or on the beat. Is that right?
That's right.
When you were training?
Yes.
How long was that for?
Approximately 3.5 years before I specialized as such.
And what would that involve?
It involved doing shift system, which is early, late, nights.
Early nights. Can you explain what hours they are?
The early shift starts at 6 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you've got the late shift from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 10 o'clock at night. And then night duty from the p.m. until 6 a.m. Because obviously all stations have to be manned 24 hours a day.
Is there any particular aspect of the work that you prefer?
Not really. You do have your preferences. I mean, if it's pouring down with rain, you prefer to be in a car than walking, but somebody has to do it.
When you're out on the beat, how often, in fact, do incidents occur that require your intervention?
You can't guarantee what's going to happen when you come on. You can come on duty thinking, oh, you know, what a great day. And you end up with something terrible happening. Every day's different.
Have you ever had anything terrible or dangerous or unpleasant happening to you?
One or two things, yes. You obviously get involved with fatal accidents, even just as a police officer, as a PC.
Would you say that that was the worst part of the job? Having to attend at fatal accidents?
For myself, no. They're not as bad as some things.
But it's obviously, you say, it's not what you consider the most unpleasant part. What is?
I think the worst things that you can get involved with are the children, the elderly, and the animals. You get cases of child abuse. Children that have been beaten by parents, abandoned by parents. Again, you get the elderly people who are victims of robberies, snatches, where they've had their property literally wrenched from their hands or their necks. They're victims of burglaries.
You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to questions 14 to 16. Questions 17 to 20 are based on the following report. You now have 20 seconds to read questions 17 to 20, in which will be concluded at the meeting of the International Monetary Fund next month. In Britain, reports have been coming in of further deaths in the Strange Ways prison riot. Now in its second day, the riot seems to be escalating and the Home Office are refusing to comment on rumors that the riot is out of control. Renata Cohen has brought us this report from the scene.
I'm standing outside the main gate of Manchester's Strange Ways prison. Smoke is billowing overhead, and I can see a number of prisoners on the roof of the chapel. At the moment, there appears to be a great deal of confusion over the situation inside the prison. This morning, a squadron of riot police entered the prison, followed by firemen who managed to control a blaze in the gymnasium block. But it is still not clear whether the smoke we can see is the result of this or if other parts of the complex are on fire. We have seen dozens of ambulances entering and leaving the building, but the Home Office spokesman has refused to confirm reports of at least 11 dead and 50 wounded. It seems that at least half of the 1,600 prisoners in Strange Ways are loose in the prison, while an estimated 700 have surrendered and have been transferred to other prisons. Our latest information is that the remaining prisoners have barricaded themselves into several of the cell blocks and are resisting all attempts to remove them. The riot appears to have started during the Sunday morning service in the chapel, one of the few times when the men are gathered together in one area. I spoke to one prison officer earlier today who claimed that trouble had been brewing for several months, mainly due to severe overcrowding and reductions in exercise and visiting hours. It seems that in some cases, three prisoners have been forced to share cells designed for one person. Some of the journalists here report that they have seen canisters of tear gas and rifles in the police vans, perhaps an indication of the extreme measures now deemed necessary to get this riot under control. This is Renata Cohen reporting for LCC News in Manchester.
This month's EC trade figures were announced today and show a distinctive improvement on the second quarter.
You now have 40 seconds to check your answers to questions 17 to 20. That is the end of Part B. Part C. You will hear an interview about the ways animals form into groups. As you listen, you must answer questions 21 to 30 by writing not more than three words in the space provided on the right. You will hear the interview twice. You now have 60 seconds to read questions 21 to 30. Right, you're talking about social groupings here. Could you tell us something about the ways animals form into groups?
Yes, many animals are very solitary animals. The only times they get together is when they mate, or when they're bringing up their young. The majority of animals are solitary, but are a very significant group of mammals and insects like ants and termites, bees and wasps are very social and they group together because in a group it's much safer. You can defend yourself more easily if you're in a group. You can find mates more easily if you're in a group. And you can change the world around you by working with others if you live in a group. Solitary animals have a much more difficult time in many ways.
You mentioned lions and other carnivora earlier on. Do they group very much?
Yes. Most cats, in fact, don't group. Lions, and to a lesser extent, cheetahs, are the only cats that group together. A group of lions is called a pride. And you might get anything up to 15 or 20 lions in a pride. A pride of lions would have perhaps 2 or 3 males, perhaps a dozen females, and then the cubs. But the real lion group consists of females with their cubs. The males take for a few years, and then they get kicked out by a group of younger males that comes in and takes over.
Right. What about other animals, such as the... You've got here zebras, for example. And the apes as well, do they?
Yes. Well, zebras form temporary groups. Most of the year, they're basically on their own. Although you will get groups of mothers looking after their foals. But at one time a year, when the females are ready to mate, then the males move in, and the males fight one another very vigorously. They will try and bite each other. They will try and neck-butt each other. And the biggest, strongest males see off the others, and they're the ones that collect a little group of females around them and mate with those females. But once mating is finished, and the babies are beginning to develop inside the mother's bodies, then off the males go and live solitary lives again for the rest of the year.
And how about the apes?
Ah, well, now you're talking about the group of animals that we belong to. And apes, some apes, live in very, very big and complicated social groups. Not all orangutans, for example. Big apes that live in Indonesia and Malaysia, they're very solitary. And one adult may meet another adult only once every 2 or 3 years. When a male and a female mate, and then the only relationship then will be between a mother and her baby. The baby will stay with the mother for 2 or 3 years. 4 years, 5 years even, learning from the mother, learning what sorts of foods to eat, what the signs of danger are, and then when the baby grows up, off it'll go and live its own solitary life. The reason why orangutans are solitary is because there's not very much food in a forest. And if there was a big group of orangutans, all the food would just run out. but leaving Asia and going to Africa, then you find very social apes. Now, gorillas, for example, gorillas live in unimale groups. They used to be called harems, but the technical term is unimale because there's one male within the group, one male, and then around him will be anything up to 6, 7, 8, 9 females plus all the babies. And that one male in the group is the silverback gorilla. And he's much bigger and stronger than the others. He's got silvery fur on his back, and the others won't challenge him. And he'll lead the group slowly through the forest, settling down every night and moving on the next day, finding food. So that's a unimale group. But if you move a little bit further west into West Africa, you'll start to come across chimpanzees. Now, they're a bit smaller than gorillas. They spend a lot of time in the trees, whereas gorillas are down on the ground. And chimpanzees are much more closely related to us than they are to gorillas. They're our closest living relatives. Now, chimps live in multi-male groups. In other words, you'll get, anything up to 6, 7, 8 males. Then you'll get 2 or 3 times that number of females. A dozen, 2 dozen females, plus all the youngsters. So we're talking about groups that can be as big as 40 or 50 or even 60. Now, a chimpanzee group, multi-male group, is a very flexible type of group. It constantly splits into smaller groups. Off they go for a few days, back they come, reform, break up again, and within that group, the males tend to hang around the outside, protecting the group, fighting off rival males that might want to come in and mate with the females. But they tend to come and go to some extent. The ongoing core of the chimpanzee group consists of females with their young, and sometimes sisters will actually work together to bring up their young collectively. Yes, so apes are very, very social animals indeed. Now you are going to hear the record a second time. You now have 100 seconds to check your answers to questions 21 to 30.